WWLF, the sports animal. It's time for the Big Three, brought to you by the Metal Store. Discover why the Metal Store has become the name to know for premier manufacturer of quality metal roofing. The Metal Store is your one-stop shop for all your metal roofing and metal buildings.
Bounce to LeBron. 5:50 remains in the fourth quarter. 114-98 Cavaliers. LeBron takes a pass left side. Again, he's badgered by Ananobi. Shot clock all the way down to three. LeBron at the left point. Spins on Ananobi. Fadeaway long two. Oh, he knocks that down! 43 for LeBron. He's 19 of 27 from the field. Cavaliers 116, Raptors 98.
This just in, LeBron James, man. He's good at basketball, and so are the Cleveland Cavs. Kevin Love had a big game last night. 31 points, Dusty. I think they're waiting for the right time of the year. We see it every season.
LeBron, listen, again, a lot of people say they can flip a switch. We heard that in Oklahoma City. Was no switch to flip. When LeBron James says it, I believe it, Mark, because I see it year in, year out. This dude takes it to a whole nother level in the playoffs, and when he can just get one other guy to get it going to, and Kevin Love is who they need to be that guy, and he was great on the boards and knocking down shots last night. And then it was also J.R. Smith for the second straight game. You know, he gives them 15 points and a couple of threes. So last night, wow, is what I have to say, because I thought Toronto would tie this thing up. And it was really competitive game in the first half. And LeBron James and Cleveland came out in the third quarter and just smacked Toronto around and basically showed him who was daddy. And that's just kind of the MO for LeBron against Toronto. This will be the third straight postseason that Toronto has been sent fishing to the hand of LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. So that was – this series is over, Mark. Over. I don't even know if
those guys have
not Toronto, to be honest.
We see a lot of other players stepping up in the playoffs, like Mitchell that we talked about, Rozier, but no such luck for the Raptors with Lowry and DeRozan. Hey, they've kind of shown that they're more regular season Warriors than anything else.
I don't want to go overboard, but I mean, what LeBron's doing is crazy, Mark. He went for 43-14 last night, and he had one turnover. Like, I don't. This is his 15th year. He's in this. Here's what's incredible. Now, I know he came from high school. Melo went to college for a year, and D-Wade, I think he went for a couple years. But they're all in the same year. Melo looks like an old man out there getting up and down the floor. D-Wade is done. And LeBron James is like, we keep saying, that, oh, well, he's on the downward side. Well, he's hit the top. The dude just keeps getting better. It's crazy. At some point, he's got to slow down. But in no way has he slowed down. And, you know, obviously Craig's not here, but we had that conversation last week. I don't see how anybody can say that Kevin Durant or any other basketball player has surpassed LeBron James.
It's laughable.
As the best player on the planet.
I want to take shots at Craig.
It's not even close.
Craig's a smart guy. That's a terrible opinion. It's a terrible opinion. The efficiency in which he undressed Toronto last night is incredible. 19 of 28 from the field, Dusty. He didn't do well at the free throw line, but you got to give him a pass at that. He had 14 assists and one turnover and one foul.
Crazy. I don't even know. Now, which
Matt's
also
right,
makes,
though. Don't you think that somebody could slow him down a little bit? I mean, the box score in this series and then what happened in Game 7 against Indiana, they're just letting
look
him.
Look at the Indiana series,
They're
though.
Just letting him dominate. You've got to try to double-team him. You've got to do some other things. You've got to try. I mean, he's big, strong. He can pass out of a double-team, I understand. But you're just facing inevitable doom if you play LeBron man-to-man.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who the Raptors think they've got on their team, but, you know, O.J. Anunoby is not – he's not a defensive stopper.
Nope. No, he's not. They got no stops last night, Mark, because the Cleveland Cavaliers shot 59.5% from the field, almost 60% field goal percentage. So – listen, there wasn't much defense on either end, but, again, Cleveland, we talked about it after Game 1. I did think Toronto would at least make this thing respectable, but, man, that was a gut punch. And Drake couldn't even say anything, Mark. That dude was just embarrassed, right?
What do you mean he's embarrassed just about being a super fan, or he's just embarrassed
about being a super fan of a team that, I mean, went 34-7 at home this year and just got smacked I mean, lost a close one in game one, but then got smacked on the way out in game two.
That's the
he
problem.
He was not beating his chest.
The Superfans were 0 for 2 last night. That's the problem with being a Superfan is you have to rely on somebody else to take care of business for you. You know what I mean?
You're doing the talking, and someone else is doing the acting.
That's right. Drake can write, you know, he could probably talk a lot of noise about writing hit records, but that's because he's backing it up. I mean, he's friends with all these NBA players. He should have foregone the ties to the city and just hooked up with LeBron.
But he hosted something. Did he host the ESPYs last year? No, it was the Basketball Awards.
Did he host the MVP, like that MVP?
I just remember him hosting something or him up on stage. And, like, I remember him talking to James Harden, and he was trying to get, like, too personal with his jokes. Like, I remember James Harden was like, yo, shut up, man. Like, what are you doing right now? So, like, it was interesting because he almost took, like, that friend level too far on the normal platform. I think it was the NBA
definitely.
Awards when they did their own awards.
Was he talking about Harden and the Kardashians?
I can't remember exactly what it related to, but I just remember it was a little bit over the line, and James Harden was like, easy, Drake. So I don't know. I'm surprised about what happened in Boston too, Mark. I mean, man, Brad Stevens, you just have to give the guy so much credit for having his players ready to play every night. I mean, Jaylen Brown, you know, he got 25 minutes in, but, man, especially on that second dunk, you could see him wincing. His hamstring is not all the way right, but Rozier wasn't great, but he was really good when he had to be late in the game. I mean, Jason Tatum was excellent, and we talked about it with Pinto earlier. I'm still shocked that Al Horford blows by Joel Embiid on an isolation play to close that game out as they win five. So I'm surprised. I thought the Sixers would dispatch of Boston pretty handily, but Boston hasn't been able to win away from the Garden, and I think when this thing gets back to Philly, I think Philly's going to be a much better team, much more difficult for the Celtics on their home floor.
Ben Simmons had a point-to-turnover ratio that was less than ideal. 5 turnovers to 1 point in the game. How did I just don't know how the Sixers blew that big a lead. And their defense is laughable because this Celtics team should not be able to produce routinely over 100 points.
No.
It's pretty limited.
Yes, it is. Tonight, Golden State, New Orleans. I like New Orleans tonight, Mark. I know you're thinking this thing's going to be a sweep, but I think New Orleans is going to get this one. Golden State, I think, wins 4. It's over in 5. And I like Houston. Man, everybody's on the Utah bandwagon, and I'm not saying you shouldn't be. They've been unbelievably impressive, and that's a hostile place. This is a really good Houston Rockets team. I mean, I'm not going to write them off because they lost game 2. I mean, I remember a game 1 where it was, 26 points in the third quarter? I know Utah is, you know, we can make excuses for them all we want, but Houston smacked them around. I give Utah a ton of credit for what they did in game 2, but I don't know. I'm not ready to write this Rockets team off. I think they're pretty darn good, Mark.
Well, it's pretty easy to see. They shot 27% from the 3-point line. That's not very good. No. And it's an outlier for the season, so I think that they will be much better than this. If Utah wins the series, it'll be one of the great stories in the NBA in quite a while. I mean, I know that they're a 5 seed, but you know, one point this season, they were about 8 games under 500.
Well, great for some, but damaging for other. I mean, it may be a great story from the Utah standpoint, but it would be a debacle, especially as it relates to, you know, I was listening to some people, I don't remember what show it was on, some people were talking about, you know, who's got the most pressure on this series or on this game tonight, and somehow it's James Harden. And I guess, yeah, James Harden is the league MVP this year. He's got a lot of pressure, but, man, if Chris Paul doesn't get to a conference finals, I mean, I don't know. That's just crazy because the guy's been one of the elite point guards for what feels like a decade now, and he's yet to make it past the second round of the NBA playoffs. It's kind of crazy.
He's a good player, and he's been on good teams. So there's been a little bit of circumstance, go against him, but this long into his career, you think the guy makes the conference finals.
So. Yep. Hey, Mark, we talked a lot yesterday about one of the all-time great Dallas Cowboys retiring. After our show yesterday, they had a big announcement where – did you see the diamond-studded football that Jerry gave Jason? Did you see that?
No.
Thing?
No, but I'm going to Google it right now.
It's very odd. I hope I'm not the only Cowboy fan that thought, huh, like, I don't know. I guess people
would
split your
office. Was it as odd as the bronze things that they put over in the All-American Plaza at OU for Mark Andrews and Baker Mayfield?
What the hell are those? Hey, listen, we've got a lot of people at OU listening to our show.
The teeth are too prominently featured in there.
I just want to know. I just want someone to text me. I want to know who is in charge of that. Because how did it get botched that bad, Mark? Honestly.
Well, there's one thing I know for sure is that kind of art I'm incapable of. So whoever did those probably is better than that than me. But I'm guessing that it could have been like a program that was coordinated with the Norman Public Schools kindergarten, you know, art class. That's how that happened.
They said,
you know,
that my son,
at least one or two of our friends are pissed at us right now.
They said that my kindergarten, my Hudson in kindergarten, he had a piece of art that was in the Norman art show. Maybe he drew a picture of Baker Mayfield. And they sent it to
Baker's
OU.
Picture is much better. Baker's picture is better than Andrews.
Mark Andrews.
I'll tweet the pictures if you want to check out what
we're
talking
about. I'm going to try to steer this ship back.
Wait,
anyway,
I haven't seen the football yet.
So Jerry presented Jason with a beautiful diamond studded football with a big star in the middle. But here's Jason Witten, one of my all-time favorite football players, Dallas Cowboys, and he's obviously going to the Monday Night Football booth. We'll see exactly what that entails. But here's Jason Witten on his retirement yesterday.
Today I've decided that the time has come for me to pass the torch to the next generation of Dallas Cowboys and retire from the National Football League. I was never the most talented, never the flashiest. I relied on grit. Other players might have been more talented, but I can assure you, no one was going to outwork me. Whenever young kids come up to me and ask me, how do you grow up and play for the Dallas Cowboys and have that type of career? My answer was always the same. The secret is in the dirt. I learned early on in my life, through many challenges, that I could change my circumstances with hard work, but I'd have to be willing to go out and earn it. The sheer concentration that is required to pursue a dream, you see, it's not for everyone, but it was for me. I yearned for the daily grind, and I couldn't get enough of it. With that, I never allowed my mind to drift to a place to think of what this day would look like for me. I never wanted this day to come, but it does come for all of us.
That's it, Jason Witten. Tough, gritty, a bad man. And I love that a third-round pick, and I love that he mentions hard work, because hard work, it really does pay off. So. Well, what a great career. I think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Obviously, we'll see at any point. At some point, he'll have a gold jacket, and he'll be in Canton. But I think the real question becomes, Mark, how's he going to do up in the booth? I'm intrigued to see. I don't have much of an opinion. I don't think ESPN just is going to fire him in there with some other quality candidates that obviously went through some type of interview process if he hadn't shown to them that he could be good. But, again, like I said yesterday, he would not have been one of the top guys that I thought, man, he's going to kill it in the booth. That said, I actually kind of look forward to hearing his perspective. And here's one thing, like, I think quarterbacks give great perspective, but so do other players. Like, because you can look at – you can watch a football game through different lens. I mean, the lens that I watch a football game is different than the lens you watch it or a quarterback watches it. And so now we're going to get a guy who's played, you know, at times almost like an extra tackle, but he's also been one of the – most productive pass catchers in the NFL. So I think it'll be interesting to hear from a tight end's perspective and kind of how he sees the game. So,
well, the booth will be easier than trying to fake liking that diamond football that Jerry gave him.
Did you see it? I mean, have you seen the diamond football yet?
Yeah. When somebody gives you a gift like that, I just
what do you even
you.
Say?
That needs to be.
Thank you.
That needs to be retired at Dollywood. That's something that looks like Dolly Parton would have.
But you know what? I saw it. And I said that is so Jerry Jones.
The Smoky Mountains,
isn't it? Doesn't that, I mean that's so Jerry Jones? Just glitz, glam, big lights, wow factor, boom. And it's interesting because it just seems so not Jason Witten. But congrats on a great career, And we say here, one best other of thing luck before, up in the booth. Well,
before we talk to the Bear, Chris Felica from ESPN on horse racing, rawr. I want somebody to retire. And maybe it'll be like LeBron. It just says, I didn't work hard. I'm just the best damn athlete there is. Just God-given ability. Peace out. You know what I'm saying? Everybody always says,
Mark, I'm totally
with you. I wasn't given
you.
The best ability.
I'm totally with you. If you've heard one retirement speech, you've heard them all. They always say the same thing.
How
they worked
the
so hard. They had to overcome everything. No. I want someone to just be like, well, I was really,
Henderson.
Really good.
But, I mean, do you happen to know the background of Jason Witten?
No.
Yes, I do.
He was beaten by his father as a kid.
We're stepping on Dusty's toes right now.
I mean, the background that this guy's gone through and what he's done, I think it's fair to play his 52 seconds on our radio show. I think he's earned that.
I didn't say it's not fair to play it. I'm just saying.
Incredible.
Oh, you heard one. You've heard them all. Who gives a damn? Why play it? I don't know. I think the guy's just being honest. I mean, because here's the reality. Because nobody makes it. Anybody who's that great of a player had God-given talents, obviously. But nobody makes it to the highest level being a lazy ass and not putting the work in. That's just the reality of it.
You are correct. We will take a break. We will talk horse racing.
Sorry, you struck a chord. I apologize. You attacked Jason Witten. You attacked the star. You attacked me, damn it.
I did not. You're just sensitive. I did not.
All right. Very good.
Roll the break.
Today, the Bear, Chris Felica, to give us his expertise opinion on the running of the ponies at Kentucky Derby. What's up, man?
What's going on? How are you?
I'm doing great. I felt sorry for you today, man. There's few places that scare me more than having to go to the Apple store to get my phone worked on. That's just terrible.
Well, I will tell you this. It was probably the easiest, best experience I've ever had. I was in here last week and I had an issue with my phone. I tried one thing and it didn't work. So I literally came back today. Guy took one look at you, said it's probably gonna take a couple of hours to fix. You know what? It's easier if we just swap this out and give you a new phone. So I was very happy with the way the situation was remedied.
Oh my gosh! I'd be looking for lightning or something, imminent doom around the corner after that experience. Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I bet I'm gonna make a step the remainder of the week because this is probably the best thing that's gonna happen to me in the next couple of days. That's for sure.
Bear, when I was doing some due diligence on this race, man, this field is outstanding for the Kentucky Derby. I think there's a lot of quality horses in the race this year.
It is a very deep field. I mean, you have the two undefeated horses, or actually, you know, include Mendelsohn, this 3-year-old as well. But you've got Justify and Magnum Boom, both who have never lost. You have Mendelsohn, who's undefeated, who's a 3-year-old as well. A lot of good matches. The Breeders' Cup Juvenile Champions, a horse that ran great. In his last time out, Todd Fletcher has a couple of horses that are coming in off a good prep. So it is definitely a field where, while Justify is definitely the best horse on paper and looks to be the part, it wouldn't surprise anybody if there were, oh gosh, I think you can make a legitimate argument for 7-8 horses probably in the race.
What about, Bear, what about Mendelsohn? I'm just starting to try to get myself educated on the horses, but one thing that jumped off the page at me, this horse was bought for $3 million in September of 2016. So 5-1 odds, it sounds like a pretty good horse.
Yeah, he is the lightning rod horse in the race. Yeah, people's opinions on Mendelsohn are either going to be, I love him or I hate him. I love him on top. I'm going to stand against him on top. And I think the way things are going to go here with him is, for me, I'm going to stand against him. The UAE Derby, which is the last prep race that he ran in, the winners of that race from over in Dubai that have come over and run in the Kentucky Derby, none of them have finished better than sixth. The day he ran in that UAE Derby in Dubai, the track was playing lightning fast, and it catered to his running style. He had a very easy lead up front. It was a weakish type field, and ran against a couple of other fillies in the race, one of which will be running for Bob Baffert later today as well. He won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf last year at Del Mar, got a great trip and won. But again, Mendelsohn is not up to, I think he can win, but in a big field like this with so many good, talented horses, you can't play them all, you can't use them all. You need to try and find a spot to stand against someone And I think using the history of how poorly these UAE Derby runners have run in the past, the running style where Mendelsohn's probably going to be up on the lead, facing a lot of pressure, getting dirt kicked in his face for the first time. I think there are a lot of reasons why you could stand against him here.
You mentioned Justify is the favorite, and the speed figure that he had in the Santa Anita Derby is the best, I guess, in 6 years of Derby horses leading up to the Derby. There's a lot of speed in this race, Bear. I mean, can you try to find a mid-pack runner or a closer that makes sense?
Well, I think Justify actually might get more of a stalking type trip in this race just because of where he drew. He drew a great post, I think, in post seven. While I think Bob Affleck would have preferred maybe a couple spots out a little bit more, but the three-horse promises fulfilled, the four-horse flame away, those two horses are front-running type horses. They're going to be on the lead. They got nowhere else to go. So Justify is going to be able to settle in right behind them, and then to Justify's outside, he has three real stone-cold closers in My Boy Jack, Hoffberg, and Lone Sailor. I mean, those horses aren't going to be fighting to get early close type position. So I think Justify is going to fall into a trip where he's third or fourth around that first turn in a really, really good spot. And it's just a question of from there whether he's good enough to hold off the rest of the closers.
Talking with Chris Felica, the Bear from College Football Game Day, and also knows a thing or two about the ponies. So we're discussing some Kentucky Derby. What about Magnum Moon? I've heard some good things about this horse as well.
I'm a little higher on Magnum Moon than a lot of other people. He's the other undefeated colt. We talked about the Curse of Apollo, and no horse that has been unraced as a two-year-old has won the Kentucky Derby since Apollo in 1882. Both Justify and Magnum Moon did not run last year as a two-year-old. They developed a little bit later, so they don't have a lot of people like it, a foundation as a two-year-old as they move forward towards the Kentucky Derby. But I'm of the sense of that's a little bit of a a misnomer, a little bit of hogwash. Curlin was unraced as a two-year-old in 2007. He didn't win the Kentucky Derby because he drew poorly and Street Sense ran huge. In 2012, Bodie Meister didn't win the Kentucky Derby because just got up late and beat him after Bodie Meister set all of the fractions. If Magnum Moon or Justify lose, I think it's going to be more because they simply just got beat or had a bad trip. The one thing with Magnum Moon that a lot of people are pointing to, and I think there is some merit to it, is the fact he's had a tendency to lug out a little bit in the stretch. And that could be a sign that he's getting a little leg weary, a little tired later in races, and it might not cater to him being able to go from a mile and an eighth to a mile and a quarter. But I will say this, if you like Magnum Moon and you've been on Magnum Moon, the price you're going to get on him tomorrow is going to be a heck of a lot better than the 6-1 he is in the morning line.
I see myself going up there with like a 12-horse Exacta box. That's not the way to win. All right, Bear, I like the 18, Vino Rosso. I think he's definitely bred to go to the distance. He had a blazing work last week. Tell me why that's a good pick or not.
Vino Rosso is a horse that he can finish, and that's a good thing in this race. Whether he's fast enough early on to stay in contention is one thing. It's funny. Last year before the Kentucky Derby, I said if I could buy a future bet on the horse that's going to win the Belmont Stakes, it would be Tapperit. And Tapperit wound up winning the Belmont. Vino Rosso was that horse this year. If I could buy a futures bet on the horse to win the Belmont, I think Vino Rosso would be that horse. He is a closer, so he's going to be finishing up strong. It's just going to be a question of whether or not he's going to be able to run down Justify or one of the other front runners in front of him. The interesting thing to get really hardcore horse racing on you here is he was the winner of the Wood Memorial, which is typically one of the biggest prep races there is. And the winner of the Wood Memorial has not won the Kentucky Derby since H.E. Pegasus in 2000. A lot of time they go into the race very highly regarded, take a lot of money. They're a top four betting choice, and they just don't run well for some reason. So it's a little bit of a quirk. I wouldn't hold it against him here. It's just funny how a lot of these highly regarded horses coming out of New York haven't necessarily come to Churchill Downs and run well. But Vino Rosso is definitely a horse I will use in my trifectas and my attackers.
Last horse I'm going to ask you about until I tell you exactly how I need to bet, because I am a horse novice. I don't know nothing. But My Boy Jack, my partner Mark, his son's name's Jack. I mean, that's his boy Jack too. And then I believe what the stables, don't tell my wife stables. I mean, I think they bought the horse for $20,000. 30 to 1, I know it's a long shot, but is it worth putting a couple of nickels down?
They've run him like a rented mule.
Jack?
He's run 10 times.
He is a horse that he is proof. He's if stakes placed on turf, he stakes placed on dirt. Kent DeSormo and the trainer is his brother, Keith DeSormo. He's a horse that got into the Derby a couple weeks back by winning the Lexington. He is another horse that is a closer. I don't think he can win the race, but I think they're going to ride him to put him in the best position to hit the board. And if you want to bring this back to Mendelsohn, Mendelsohn and My Boy Jack ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf last year. Mendelsohn was 5-1 in that race. My Boy Jack drew a terrible post all the way on the far outside and was 11-1 in the race and only got beat three lengths despite a terrible start and a terrible trip. I would much rather play My Boy Jack at 20 or 30-1, whatever he's going to go off at, as opposed to Mendelsohn at 5-1, just because I think the flow of the race is going to favor My Boy Jack in terms of finishing up a little bit better.
Okay, I assume that you're not going to condone my 12-horse exacta box at the window, which probably wouldn't cash anyway. So who are you going to be playing tomorrow?
Those who listen and follow me during football season know I am not a favorite player. I'm a contrarian type, but in a race like this, I'm really having a hard time getting by Justified. I think if he gets the trip that I envision him getting, he's going to get a clear run on the leaders, and I think he's going to click here in the stretch. And a couple of the long shots people will get it. Maybe Baldoro, the 11, can get up there in the try. We mentioned My Boy Jack getting up there in the triple. Lone Sailor, the 8, is another horse I think can maybe get in the try. And the 20 Combatant is a horse that reminds me a lot of Looking at Lee last year, who ran second for Steve Asmussen at a big number. So I would put the 7 on top and then maybe fool around with the with the 8, 10, 11, 20, and the 18 being also underneath for second and third. But if the race goes the way I think it's going to, I think we're going to get a 6th straight winning favorite in the Derby.
Beautiful. I'm going to be winning money, and it's all going to be because of you. Thank you, Bear. Now, real quickly, we'd have to ask you at least one question about college football. College football futures, are there any win totals and or, future, whether it's a conference championship, get to a national championship? Are there any numbers you've seen early that have piqued your interest?
It's really hard at this point to not imagine either Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, one of those four teams not winning the national championship. I mean, I haven't seen any odds to get up there to make the playoff yet, because there's certainly teams that you could make a case to make the playoff. The one win total that I saw, which was kind of interesting, was LSU's at 7.5. And I would be an under on LSU this year. I think the quarterback problems that they have, losing a lot on that team, the schedule does them no favors this year. I think the things that have gone on with the coaching staff, what's going on there, who knows how that's going to pan out. But if you run down LSU's schedule, try and find me 8 definitive wins, and I can't see them. I think 7-5 is probably the best case for LSU this year.
Wow, that's great stuff. Hey, Bear, enjoy the Derby. And I was just with Herbie and some of the college football guys the last couple of days in Scottsdale. Can't get here soon enough, man.
Awesome, absolutely. Take care, guys.
All right, see you, Bear.
All right, there you go. Chris Felica, the Bear from College Game Day. He knows
over
his ponies, Marcus. Holy cow.
Does. I got the over on Ed Orgeron, energy drinks and bench press. The under on his job.
I don't know. I was completely wrong on Ed Orgeron. You're right. You should bask in that glow. That was an easy layup for you, and I was.
You liked him because he was good. I got
mesmerized by the defensive line coach in him. It got me.
You're a sucker for the defensive line coach. I hear you. We'll try to keep you on the straight and narrow.
It's not gonna end the way. Hey. You know what's going around college football and around all of football? I know everyone says it's dying, it's going away. Money, money, money. We'll discuss next.
Pollutants in those rivers that flow up that way. Remember when the river in Cleveland caught on fire? Or was that someplace else?
Okay. No, I don't remember.
It happened in Cleveland. It was definitely before my time.
Is that the mistake by the lake, or is that the Browns, or is that the stadium? Can we ask Jim?
You have to ask him at some point.
I was looking for a little chuckle there. Just hit the, hit the laugh meter. Give me the fake laugh. That's right.
Man, every time.
Crickets. Right, you guys are a tough audience today.
I didn't think it was that funny.
Okay, it wasn't funny.
Sorry.
It wasn't funny.
Sorry.
It wasn't funny.
What? So
LeBron James raised the roof in last night's victory for the Cavs over the Raptors. Game three
was on fire.
In which the Cavs return home with a 2-0 lead.
Do you remember NBA
Dusty, you
Jam?
Said,
are you too old for NBA Jam?
Yes, NBA Jam was great. No, of course not. That's a great game.
Man, one of the all-time great games. That's what LeBron, he was in like, when the dude's on fire and the ball's flaming? That's what LeBron was playing like last night. He was like an NBA Jam dude that's on fire. He had flaming balls, there's no doubt.
No question about that. Dusty, you were talking about guys getting paid. Matt Ryan got paid, and he deserves that money. I think he deserves that money. $100 million guaranteed, though. That's pretty nice cash.
Love it, man. Hey, you know what? Absolutely. And quarterbacks of NFL franchises, this is the marketplace, right? Kirk Cousins making $28 million a year. Jimmy Garoppolo's making $27.5 million. Matthew Stafford's making $27 million. You got to pay Matt Ryan. And the other big winner in this situation is Aaron Rodgers. Because Aaron Rodgers has just been waiting to see what Matt Ryan's deal was going to look like. And here pretty soon we'll have Aaron Rodgers ink the largest deal in NFL history. But you got to pay the quarterback if you have one. It's the most important position in the NFL, if not in all of sports. And Matt Ryan, he's shown that he can get a team right there to win a championship. So was MVP last year, and obviously they had a 28-3 lead at halftime of that game that they blew in the Super Bowl. So I find it interesting, though, because, they're making a lot of money, so you should get paid a lot of money. But, it wasn't that long ago where $20 million was kind of that standard barrier for quarterbacks. And now it looks like $30 million is going to be the new 20. 30 is the new 20, Mark.
And a good day also for Kirby Smart.
I would say a great day for Kirby Smart and the guy that he took over for Georgia, Mark Richt, they both ink extensions yesterday. Kirby Smart, 7 years, $49 million contract.
Show me the money!
At his alma mater. I'm with you, Jerry. He got shown the money. Now, what's crazy, Mark, is, that's a ton of cash, $7 million. And he is only tied for the fifth most in college coaching. There's six coaches in college that make $7 million or more. And Urban Meyer's making 8.5. He's the highest annual coach. Saban 8.28, Harbaugh 7.7, Jimbo Fisher 7.5. You've got Gus Malzahn and now Kirby Smart making $7 million. So it kind of feels like, just like I said with quarterbacks, like seven is like the new, like if you're a good coach, you're a top 10 coach, you're going to be making $7 million or more. Like, and it felt like probably, 5 to 7 years ago, that number was kind of $5 million. Like, it felt like Bob Stoops was a top five paid coach for a long time, and it was always around that $5 million number. Well, $5 million is in the rear view, which also tells me, Marcus, that Joe Castiglione and the University of Oklahoma are about to have to break out the checkbook for their head coach. Because if you think Lincoln Riley isn't paying attention and seeing what Kirby Smart and other people around him, the type of money they're making, you're crazy.
That's right. If you're going to be in the business of having a successful college football program, you're going to have to pay a bunch of money to keep up with the Alabamas, Georgias, Auburns of the world.
Pay that man his money.
I mean, you're right, and you've got to do it. So good for those coaches. If the money's out there that they're able to make it, good on them. Definitely go make as much as you can. But please, I don't want people to come to me telling me how these programs and these places don't have any money. Because when you see this, and again, if it's there and you got it, spend it. Give it to them. Earn as much you can earn. But then I don't want to hear the other side of the coin, how cash-strapped athletic departments are all across the country. You can't have it both ways, Mark, right? I mean,
well, they are. Can't be. I think it's a result of the situation.
right. Correct. But, you can't complain about it. Hey, Darren Revell had an interesting nugget here. How about this? I know you can always kind of do these things, but Darren Revell, he had – in 2000, Kirby Smart was the defensive backs coach at Valdosta State. And now it says the job included helping to build the locker room. What do you think he made that year, Mark? At Valdosta.
$18,000
that year for Kirby. This year.
That goes a long way in Valdosta.
This says, and then he has below it, Kirby Smart will make $19,178 per day 18 years later as the Georgia head football coach. Good for Kirby Smart. I'm sure if he wants to, he'll be putting a few pennies down on the ponies tomorrow at the Kentucky Derby. We've got a lot to get to. We've got Royce Young coming up at 1:25, and we will continue to discuss the Kentucky Derby as well as the NBA right here on the Leader in Sports, 98.1 WWLS, the sports animal. Is that what you want to hear?
I wasn't specifically directing my comments towards Jason Witten. I just want somebody in a retirement speech not to say I worked the hardest. I was the best. It was just the best.
Did someone say I was really lazy?
Somebody did.
I got by on all my athletic ability. I'm LeBron James. I didn't try in the regular season. Because the league's not good enough to.
Who did that? Kenny Powers?
That's exactly who. He would wake up and piss excellence. He didn't have to do anything. Kenny, I mean,
I'm not trying
to
be the best at exercise.
You want a real life Kenny Powers? I mean, it's a great show, but
why not
play well in the real world? Except for the fact that he comes on at 2. Oh, it comes on. By the way, Mark.
I'm sick and tired of carrying all the weight. The coaches and owners not giving me the shit I need to win. Atlanta, you're f***ing out. Kenny Powers is now a free agent. By the bar and get faced, huh? Get me paid, bitch. Superstar.
Why not? That would be entertaining. I would tune in for the retirement speech there. I'm not driving past that.
Could you imagine a professional athlete like that in the same market that The Ultimate did radio? Oh, it would just be legendary. Legendary.
I don't think he would condone that type of activity.
Hey, okay, yeah, probably not. But Kenny Powers is a true gem in cinema. That cannot be debated. Yesterday, I caught some of Jim's show, and I'm not one to tell anybody how to do their show, but it was very odd, Mark, that Jim took the time on a day that was all about Barry Trammell being inducted into the Journalism Hall of Fame to make it about our station or him or a fight he has with Jenny Carlson. And I don't know, man. I mean, again, Jim could talk about whatever he wants. It's his 4 hours. He's been doing this a long time. But I don't know. It just seemed like on a day that we should have just been celebrating and giving it up to a guy who's had an amazing career, it got flipped and made more about our station and about Jim. And I don't know. I was baffled by that. And then just the interaction with him and Tram. I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing there'll be an apology at some point today, but sure seems like there's one that's in order.
Chris Lee, who's a photographer, photo journalist at Channel 5 that I work with for a long time, also went into the Hall of Fame in that class, and I haven't seen really a whole bunch of others. But I think the best we can do is just say, dude, for Tram, that's well-deserved. For Chris, it was well-deserved as well. But, you know, you and I sat with Tram the other night at the lasagna dinner, super dude. And for as long as he's been doing this, it's pretty impressive what he's done. So just say congratulations to him on making that distinction. It's certainly well earned. You ever heard his story about when he was on a couple weeks ago talking about how he kind of went pro and turned pro, starting to work for the Transcript right out of high school?
Out of high school?
Yeah.
So he's right in the Transcript while he was going to college?
Yes, I think he was the sports editor there. Not to bring me into this, but I wrote some articles for the local paper in high school. The sports editor had a hernia. He went down, Dusty. I don't think it was a sports hernia. I just think it was a hernia. And so then I took over writing about some spring sports. They paid me. They did not pay me Kirby Smart money at the time. I think it was like $10 a week.
You're on the Valdosta pay scale.
That's correct. That's right.
That's very cool.
Anyway,
I know Barry's
writing career is
Barry's a very
it did
good,
not flourish.
He's a very good journalist, very nice man, and I enjoy reading his stuff. Don't always agree with it, but I think he's very well written, and see, he's a, you know, he's great for the Oklahoma City community. So that was a really special thing yesterday, and I apologize that I wasn't even fully aware that that was happening, and I didn't give a chance to give it up to him and say congratulations. But I remember whenever we found out that it was happening, I just didn't realize that yesterday was the date that he was being put into the Oklahoma Journalism Hall of Fame. But definitely well-deserved, well-deserved. Are you there, Mark?
I'm right here. Where would you like to go next? Did you have you made a pick on the Derby?
Yeah, I'm going to Justify. Pretty simple.
The Bear talk you into Justify?
Yeah, it wasn't very hard. I mean, I'll take the favorite. I'm not afraid.
Justify has had a couple of incredible moves in races where he just left the field in the dust. And there was a great article by Dick Girardi, who we've had on the show several times in the past, breaking the Derby down, just talking about how special Bob Baffert thinks this horse is. So the connections, which is the trainer and the jockey here, Mike Smith, I mean, that's, you got to like the fact that those two guys are involved. And then I love handicapping the trip of the race. I think that's one of the more effective ways to try to break down a race, and especially in a race that has 20 horses in the field. So the Bear makes a pretty good point about the speed being to the inside and the closers being to the outside. That means that it's unlikely that he's going to get squeezed in that seven position where he has some trouble early in the race, because you can be done in that race if you're bumped around in the very beginning. I mean, especially if you want to try to run a tactical race. So there's a lot to like about that horse. But, man, and in this race, there's going to be so much money in the pool, Dusty, that you can have the favorite for the exacta. You can still make a lot of money if you can find somebody to run underneath him. But there's some really good horses at really good prices in this race.
Who do you like?
Now, the number 20 combatant like, that he talked about, that's the Keith Asmussen horse, ran at Remington.
Mm-hmm.
And finished second in the Remington Mile here at the end of 2017. So that's kind of a local connection. But I do like Mendelsohn. That horse, you know, he's shipped all over the country, all over the world, I mean, and had success. And I know that the Bear brought up some really good points about the fast track at the UAE Derby and things like that. But, most of my betting is going to involve. I'm not going to try to go in there and overpower it with cash, but I'm going to play some my boy Jack the 10, and I also like Mendelsohn. So either with him or against him, I'm.
You said you liked Vino Rosso too, right?
I do like the 18 quite a bit. Son of
Carlin,
one of the top.
If I'm able
horses.
To put any bets in, I will be on Justify. I will be on Magnum Moon, and I will have to throw something on My Boy Jack. That would be the three horses.
Another,
the 7, the 16, the 10.
Another indicator for the Derby is distance, because none of these horses will have run a mile and a quarter before, and Vino Rosso is bred to run extra distance, and then his speed figure. A lot of times people will handicap based on what your speed figure is at the end of the race. How fast are you running at the end of the race? You know what I'm saying? Is that like, cause horses are like humans. They're going to get tired the further that you run. And Vino Rosso's at the end of the race, his speed figure, he's got one of the best in the field. So if the pace is fast early, and I think it's going to be, then I do think the closers are going to fare pretty well in this race. So,
when'd you get to horse racing?
Tomorrow. That's a good question, man. I went to the horse races with my grandma in Phoenix at Turf Paradise a couple of times, and always liked the horse races. A lot of fun. So even when Remington opened up, I would go up there with friends, and I hit the cold pick six on a tip sheet once at Remington, quarter horses.
Nice. Well,
got a copy of it. He likes to see it. Didn't play it, but I picked it. I will be at the Jones Assembly tomorrow at 3 o'clock for a big benefit for autism. I know Phil's going to be working tomorrow at the race downtown that they have at the ballpark, but it's called Juleps at the Jones, and I bet they would love to see you there. $20 will get you in the door, and we'll be outside. And it's going to have a hat contest for the ladies. So wear your best hat. And I think they're going to give away some stuff if you pick the right horse. One of those deals where you put your ticket in the a big bowl with the number of the horse on it. So that will be a good time. And then on Sunday night, this event is sold out. I'm going to be Dusty, you told me this place is next to Riverwind. I've never been there before. Southwind?
Yes, it's Southwinds. Yes.
It's
not next to supposedly. It's down a little bit. It's Goldsby. It's a little bit further south than Riverwind, but it's, you know, probably about 2-3 miles away. But it's a beautiful, beautiful place that they built to have, you know, different events, weddings, things like that, and obviously the event that you're helping host.
Yeah, it's Sooners Helping Sooners, which is a great program for former OU athletes. And Coach Switzer, Coach Riley, and Coach Stoops will all be there. We'll be doing facilitating a Q&A with the audience on Sunday night. Now, again, that's sold out, but Sooners Helping Sooners is going to have a big golf deal coming up in October that you can be a part of if you want to help the cause there. So it'll be a busy weekend for me. Hopefully you'll have a relaxing weekend.
You know what? It should be pretty relaxing. I get back tomorrow around noon, and we've got a bunch of stuff. My daughter's having her, even though her birthday was early in the week, we're having her birthday, and a bunch of families coming to town. And then Jackson is actually going to take his first communion on Sunday. So my family's coming up.
That's a big weekend.
So we've got a big family weekend planned at the house. So hopefully, is the weather supposed to be nice? I'm hoping that maybe we can do some swimming if the weather permits. That's what I'm
weather
hoping.
Looks good.
Hey, you know who did not look good today? And yesterday, for that matter? The Tiger. He's lucky. The projected cut right now is +2, which is where he's sitting. But it was not. No. Give me the little meow.
Meow.
Give me the little. Yeah, that's what he was doing
Joey
the last
Merson?
2 days. It might have been. Okay, but that's Joey Merson getting run over by my wife in the garage, and that was Tiger Woods on the course the last couple of days. He couldn't make a putt to save his life. He was terrible with the putter both days, and what looked like when he finished up, he would not make the cut. But again, now the projected cut line is at +2, which would get him in. So looks
I fully
like he
realize
should play through the weekend, but rough start.
I fully realize that I'm up for being publicly rebuked at 2:00 for this statement, but what Tiger needs is to get out there and play. So if he makes the cut, make or miss the cut's important here because he needs more rounds of competitive golf.
Yes, he does.
So it's important to me that not that he wins this tournament, but that he makes the cut so he can be out there for a couple more rounds.
I was reading some of his comments from yesterday, and he was talking about how much more difficult the course is now than what it was several years back and all these different things. I just thought, man, it sounded like he was making some excuses, but 33 putts today, Mark, and he only made one putt longer than 6 feet.
He's going to make the cut.
Yeah, no, he should. He's right at the cut line right now, but not a good start to the the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow Club in Charlotte, North Carolina. So, sorry, boys. Missile, I still think you're going to win your bet with the Ultimate. He's got to win an event at some point. But
This week's not
it's
the.
Not gonna be this
I mean, the U.S. Open isn't this week, so.
No, it's not. Okay. Do we have Royce Young coming up? Correct. We're going to talk some NBA basketball. I believe Royce Young is in the City of Angels. At least that's what some people would like us to think. Salt Lake City.
What's he doing in Los Angeles or Salt Lake?
That's Salt Lake City. Isn't he? He's covering this series, is he not?
Well, the City of Angels is still Los Angeles, right?
Not anymore. I've changed it. I mean, I don't care what Los Angeles used to be. After hearing Barry Trammell describe Salt Lake City, and then I think we had Royce kind of expound upon that. L.A.'s got nothing on the Great Salt Lake.
Matt Pinto shot down Salt Lake's greatness.
Yeah.
He's probably been there more often than Royce and Tram.
That man, he does not like the Houston Rockets. I'll tell you that. But I'll tell you what else. the Utah Jazz fans have gotten under his skin so much, he doesn't like them either. I don't know if there's many people he likes. And he likes the Thunder.
When they put James Harden and Chris Paul on the same team, that's going to be a strong go against for him.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of talking like he's already thinks that's over. This thing's already flipped to Utah. It is a big game, number three tonight. Houston at Utah, also Golden State at New Orleans. We'll get Royce Young's thoughts on those series and much more next on the Monsters of the Midday. Back it is the Monsters of the Midday, spreading all across the great country. Dusty DeVorsek with you here in Chi-Town. Mark Rogers and the Missile are back in studio. And welcome to the show from the great city of Salt Lake, the one, the only, Mr. Royce Young. Royce, how you doing?
I am doing terrific today, Dusty.
How is the fine place that you are staying currently treating you? Is it wonderful?
Yeah, I would say wonderful. I'm in my standard Marriott across the street from the arena. Feels great.
No, but the Salt Lake City in general.
Oh, yeah, Salt Lake City. Big fan. Good weather. I told you, man. I can run down the list again. It's a top five or six NBA city. It's a great place.
Let me ask this now with the rise of Rudy Gobert and now Donovan Mitchell. Are you like you're not out there like? You know, thinking about what might be in other cities, are you?
I mean,
are you like actively shopping like a free agent here? What's going on?
Yeah, you know, let's just say that maybe I'm trying to get to know Donovan Mitchell a little bit better. You know, but I'm just out here doing my job. You know, I can't say that I'm like Kevin Durant at the Super Bowl or anything here. I wouldn't say I'm being recruited while under contract elsewhere. I wouldn't say that.
Hey, what is Utah going to do with all that money that they have this offseason and free agency? Why don't you find something out about that? Because we need to know.
You know who would make a lot of sense for Utah?
Yes.
Yeah, we do. Paul George.
Wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be a twist of fate, Mark? It happened with Durant. The Warriors beat the Thunder, and Durant goes there. The Jazz beat that would be something.
Hey, you know what? That would be a legitimate – I mean, I'm just saying, that is a difficult team to deal with if Donovan Mitchell continues on the growth pattern that it looks like he is. You know, I mean, if he came back next year and kind of had a sophomore slump or something, well, that's not nearly as attractive. But this guy we've seen the latter half of the season and here in this postseason, that's, you know, him, Gobert, and Paul George, that's a pretty potent threesome.
Yeah, I mean an excellent coach in Quinn Snyder, really solid front office. I mean, the Jazz are a very stable, solid organization. Really kind of mirror the Thunder in a lot of different ways. You know, that's one of the things about it, Dusty, is that, like, there was so much made, and I think a lot of it was because of Russell Westbrook's star power and the narrative of Durant leaving and Russell staying. But there was so much made for the Thunder's bounce-back season after losing Kevin Durant. And granted, Kevin Durant is on another stratosphere than Gordon Hayward, but this has been an incredible year for the Jazz in year one post Gordon Hayward. I mean, they built for 5 or 6 years to get to where they were at last year, to have a team that wins the division and gets through the first round of the playoffs. And it really looks like they're kind of building something formidable. And then Gordon Hayward leaves them, and it felt like the Jazz were about to take a significant step back. I mean, that's what everybody expected in the NBA this year. They thought, you know, this team could be kind of solid, but, like, not necessarily that good. And then they trade Rodney Hood, and it looked like the Jazz were basically saying, like, look. And the way they started the season, too, the Jazz did not start well. But since Gobert has come back from injury, and then, like you said, Dusty, Donovan Mitchell, his ascension here into stardom, this has been an incredible story.
What's the key for them in the game tonight? I don't think Houston's going to continually shoot as bad as they have that they did in game two. 27%.
Game two was weird to me, Mark. You know, it's just it felt like, you know, obviously the Jazz came out playing extremely well, and the Rockets kind of made the comeback that everybody expected. When Houston took the lead in the third quarter, it felt like the game was over, even though it was like a 1-point game. And I don't know really what happened to the Rockets there. You know, a lot of the things that they did offensively, they just kind of got away from. I think you saw a team that pressed a little bit, and I think Harden specifically was a little guilty of that. That, you know, the game was getting a little bit away from them. They weren't scoring so effortlessly. Guys weren't knocking down shots.
And I think that they got a little bit away from their identity, and that's what happens to you in the postseason. That's why you know, something that you do so well. You know, it's one thing, we're not making shots in February. What's the big deal? We move on. You know, you move to the next city, and it's over with. Who cares? We're the best team in the NBA. In the playoffs, you feel that, like, pressure of, like, and that, you know, that's why you see guys like Westbrook go out and shoot 43 times, is sometimes that can overwhelm you a little bit. But I think that, for one, I think Chris Paul's got to play better. I don't think he played very well at all in Game 2. The foul trouble was an issue. You know, James Harden had a couple, you know, he draws some iffy fouls on people, but he had some iffy calls made on him. So, you know, but look, I've been in this building that's across the street from me for three playoff games, and it is going to be noisy, and the Rockets better be ready to play.
I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, Matt Pinto was on today filling in for Craig.
Go ahead, Dusty. We do have a delay issue here, clearly. Anyway, all right, Royce. All right. The other game tonight, Pelicans and Warriors, sure. I know you're not covering that one, but I think when the Warriors are ready just to turn it on, that's enough of a switch to flip to beat the Pelicans. So I think that series is going to be a sweep. You think the Pelicans can get on the board tonight?
Part of me thinks I want to give the Pelicans one game, Mark, just because, for one, Anthony Davis is that good. And then two, I just kind of think the Warriors are a little bit susceptible to kind of mailing one in a little bit, even though this is the postseason. But look, the Warriors are clearly that, you know, all this talk of, oh, they finished the season, you know, where did they finish the season? 7-10, got blown out a few times. It was like, oh man, can the Warriors, here, I put it this way, with kind of the hand wringing that was going on with the Warriors, here's how desperate people are to try to find some sort of, you know, vulnerability in the Golden State Warriors. Is I actually heard people saying things like, I don't know, Steph Curry's coming back. What if that messes up some of the rhythm? No. They're going to be just fine getting Steph Curry back, and I think you saw that exact thing in Game 2. Which, Steph Curry even willing to come off the bench. Carmelo Anthony not. Steph Curry willing to come off the bench in one game. So I thought that was interesting.
Dusty?
Okay, can you hear me?
All right, there we go.
Yep.
Oh, yes. Okay, great. Sorry about that, guys. What I was going to ask you is, I was saying that Pinto was on earlier for Craig, and he was talking about the Utah fans, and like to the point, like, not just loud, but he felt they were very offensive, abrasive. He was not a fan whatsoever. Now, I've been around a lot of different kind of fans. I mean, did you feel that? I mean, are these Utah fans, are they going over the line and not just being a rowdy, hostile place to play, but getting more personal and offensive?
You know, I heard some different Thunder staffers mention that type of stuff. I've heard some of them talk about it. I didn't notice or see anything to that degree whatsoever. I will say, in talking to players that have played for the Thunder, that there is one fan base, and this is former players, that was consistently referenced as hostile and derogatory, and that was Utah Jazz. And it was something. It was a complaint of some multiple times, and I don't think that this is completely fabricated. I don't think that this idea that Jazz fans are a little bit maybe cross the line is completely made up. Now, I think, like you said, Dusty, I think you're going to walk into any arena, whether that's, I mean, Philadelphia had a guy stand up and flip Russell Westbrook the double birds on the baseline. So I mean, like, you walk into any arena.
I was in Stillwater in 2002, and they were giving us the business. There weren't people up there with those stands right on top of you. They weren't just whispering sweet, innocent things to me. I mean, it was brutal. Yeah. It was abrasive. But there's an element of that's just part of sports, man. Like, right. I don't know. So I just wanted to get your perspective.
They can cross the line.
You can cross the line. Yeah, you can cross the line. But at the same time, this is what fans do, right?
Exactly. And I think it's probably similar somewhat to Stillwater, Dusty, is because if you walk into this arena – it is the seats are very close to the court, especially on the baselines. It's like strangely close, and it kind of goes up at an incline. So I kind of wonder if it's just maybe a like an acoustics issue here. If the people can hear what fans are saying a lot better because of the way that the setup is, more so than some other arena.
If I lived in Salt Lake, I'd be pissed off too. I'm sorry. I let the opposing team have it. Unlike Royce, who's just in he's in utopic bliss while he's there. What do you think? Right. The East has been very – look, LeBron, the efficiency at which LeBron is destroying the Raptors is comical. I mean, like, we cannot talk about DeRozan and Lowry as superstars in this league anymore, no matter what they – I don't care if they go 82-0 next year. it will have no relevance to me until they do something in the playoffs when the games matter.
Yeah. I mean, I think that game one, Mark, where they missed seven tips or whatever, you know,
they
that
did, point Valanciunas. Yes.
Yeah, the Valanciunas game. I think that that was – that basically just sucked the soul right out of them. I think that they felt it just – and to me, it illustrates exactly what you're saying. I think the Raptors are about as mentally fragile as you can get. And they – you know, guys that are known for being playoff-tested, tough guys that you want battling with you, they go up to Toronto and they lose that. Serge Ibaka is one of the most playoff-tested, tough guys that you could want. That guy has been in some battles. –
Serge Ibaka, 47 years old. I'm just telling you, that man is past his prime. I'm sorry.
Anyways, veteran experience then, Dusty. That guy, he shrunk up. I mean, so, look, I
wouldn't use that term with Serge, but
he doesn't do much shrinking. That's true. Fair enough. Look, LeBron, like last night, Mark, LeBron was just out there just practicing fadeaways on him. I mean, it was like he was just completely clowning the Raptors, and I kind of think the Raptors are going to get a game in this series. I don't think this is going to be just a straight sweep. I think that they're probably going to dig in and try to, you know, just somewhat not go out with complete humiliation. But, I feel like we spent a lot of the season, Mark, talking like, you know, when we'd be in January, February, March, it was like, man, what's up with the Cavs? And everyone was kind of like, you'd want to push the press, the panic button on the Cavs and say, I think that they actually do have problems. I think this is, and then we'd always come back, but if they got LeBron, I mean, see, and this is why, because LeBron James is that unbelievable.
It's crazy. It's got to slow down at some point. I mean, I thought about this. I think about this all the time now, because now I've watched Melo for a full season firsthand, mm-hmm. not just every few games. And I see what 15 years has done to him. I watched Dwayne Wade and I see what 15 years has done to him. And I watch LeBron James, and what's crazy is the guy is still – I don't even know if he's on – I mean, he's still going up. Like, we're still seeing better and better, and he's in that 15th year. So I really think that speaks to, I mean, A, his greatness, and B, just how he's been able to take care of his body to be able to stay and play at the level he has. It's crazy.
You know how, like, in golf, Dusty, like, as people get older, like, they always say that, like, you know, when you start getting older, your short game gets a lot better. You start making more putts and you start chipping better because you lose the other stuff. So you start focusing in on, like, the short game. And, like, I feel like in basketball, it's kind of like that's how it is in shooting. Like, you start losing some of your explosiveness and athleticism. So you start getting better at the shooting. LeBron's getting better at the shooting. The short game is getting better. But, like, he's still got all the other stuff, too. So, like, it's just he is aging like fine wine. That's what everybody keeps saying. And here's the other thing. You mentioned Carmelo Anthony. You know who else is the same age as LeBron James? Kendrick Perkins. That just blows my mind in every way.
That is that.
Perk does have some miles on those tires.
Hey, what's the word on the street? Because he's still the best player in the NBA, and he will be next year again too. But what are your people saying? Where's LeBron going to end up? We don't. I mean, we talk so much about Paul George, but the number one domino in this entire free agency frenzy that'll start is LeBron James. So what are people saying?
The way you set that up, I thought you were going to ask me something about Joe Ingles, the best player in the NBA.
Is he a free agent?
I think he just signed, actually. I think he signed up with the Jazz long term. You know, here's the thing with LeBron, that there's going to be a lot of talk, and, you know, once the Cavs go out, wherever that happens to be, whether, you know, if they win the championship, I think LeBron's coming back. You know, I don't think he's going to leave a title team in Cleveland. But if they happen to go out before winning a championship, there's going to be a lot of teams pop up. You know, you're going to have the Philly thing. You got supposedly the Knicks have hired David Fizdale because they want to take a shot at LeBron. Everybody's going to kind of think they've got a chance. I still believe that Cleveland is the leader in the clubhouse, and I think you're kind of seeing it right now. And that LeBron, I think he came back to Cleveland because he wanted to, like, finish his career there. I think that's what he kind of wanted to do, and that's the vision that he had. I think he won that title a little faster than he anticipated. You know, I think that he probably thought it was going to be a little bit more of a grind to get to it, and then he got it, and I think that kind of has opened the door for him to be able to leave. You know, I don't think he would have been leaving Cleveland had he not won the title. I don't think that would even be a consideration, because I think that he would view this as unfinished business, and that's what he came back to do. Now that he's got this title, I think he kind of feels like, oh, I could look at L.A., I could look at this place, I could look at that place. But when it relates to Paul George, you know, and everybody talks about it, LeBron does hold the cards in a lot of different ways, I think, with Paul, because they have a very strong relationship. It would not shock me if those two guys have already been talking to each other a little bit. So, you know, I think that, you know, when it comes down to what does Paul George do, I think LeBron is going to be the first domino to fall, and then you'll see what happened with Paul after that.
Hey, Joe Ingles is signed through 2021 in Utah. Is Ricky Rubio going to play tonight?
I don't think so, but I mean, he's getting closer. I think they need him. I think they definitely need him. Look, Donovan Mitchell was fantastic in Game 2, despite shooting 6 of 21. I mean, that's kind of just how good he was in the game in other areas. And that tip dunk was absolutely just insane. But I think that you did see a little bit of the burden of putting all the creative responsibility on Donovan Mitchell take shape in other areas. They need that guy to score. They need him to be able to take over games at different points. And so, you know, if you put that whole offensive responsibility on him, Mark, I think you see kind of where that can wear him down. So they need Rubio back at some point.
Great stuff, Royce. Enjoy Salt
Lake
City. We'll talk to you next week, man.
All right, see y'all.
Can't wait.
All right, very good. Big boxing event coming to Oklahoma City this June. Saturday, June the 30th, one of Oklahoma City's own is going to be fighting on the card. His co-main event, Alex Saucedo. Rich Bernard joins me. Rich has had interest in Alex as a fighter for a long time. Rich, it's got to be great to see him come back to Oklahoma City in such a great venue like Chesapeake.
Yeah, Mark, thanks for letting us talk about the fight here. We've been supporting Alex and sponsoring his career here for a few years, and he's been fighting all over the United States. And one of his big priorities was to come home to Oklahoma City, and the time has finally come. And to do it, Chesapeake is just on a national TV ESPN card, top ranked feature card, and it's just going to be really exciting for him and for all the fight fans here in Oklahoma City.
He's 27-0 and owned by the company that features Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg. And they don't own very many fighters, so he's really on his way up. I was reading his bio. Rich said that he's fought over 150 amateur fights. That would be like two a day, right? He's not very old. How could he have fought that many times as an amateur?
Yeah, you know, he came to a boxing gym here in the Capitol Hill area. Really, his dad brought him to the gym just to kind of give him a little time to expend a little extra energy when youngsters are that age. You know, he didn't want him getting in trouble in school and getting into the wrong crowd, so he took him to the boxing gym there in Capitol Hill. And my brother-in-law was one of the voluntary trainers there when he was 9 years old, and they just saw that he had a lot of talent there from early on. So he went all over the state of Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, fighting amateur bouts for, you know, his whole youth, and turned pro when he was 17. He was set to go to London to participate in the 2012 Olympics, and sort of at the 11th hour, Top Rank offered him a professional contract, and he took it. So he's been a professional since 2011.
And, I mean, people think that he can be a world champion, right, which would be the first since Sean O'Grady from Oklahoma?
Yeah. Sure. The people that I talk to that are in the know, both locally and nationally, really are impressed with him. And the thing that I'd like to just tell your audience and the Oklahoma City fight fans is that if you like action boxing and you like a fighter that presses the action and makes sure that the crowd is entertained, along with having a really, really good skill set, some power, you know, you're really going to enjoy watching Alex fight. And it seems like the folks in the know have said for a long time that they see a lot of talent in Alex. Both trainers and people at the boxing commissions here in Oklahoma, they've all said, and I've had conversations with them, that they're really thinking that he has the potential to have a long-term world championship-style career.
We had Alex on before his last fight. You attended that in Los Angeles. His last two fights, he's gotten hit a little bit, right? I mean, those were tough for him. He's still undefeated as a professional. But were those good lessons for him?
I think he was certainly tested in L.A. There a few months ago when we went, and that's good, you know, for a fighter like this. They, you know, they brought Alex up, but now he's fighting a little easier fights, and he didn't have a lot of real tough fights over the first 10 or 12 professional fights that he had. But I'd say over the last five or six and a couple or three that I've been to, he's been tested. And so it's always good for those guys to get hit a little bit. You never want your fighters to get hurt, but to get hit and see how they respond to that. And he's done an excellent job in that. It was a really great fight through the first couple, three rounds in L.A. The guy that he fought, Abner Lopez, was a really strong guy and a really talented fighter, and he came back with a seventh round body shot knockout, which was terrific. So the crowd in Oklahoma City is going to love it. He's lived here for 15 years, and so he's representing Oklahoma City, and it was, you know, like I said earlier, one of his top priorities to get a big fight, and it's really exciting for Top Rank, ESPN, and Churchill Management, with Mark Wahlberg and Peter Berg involved with that deal, as Alex was their first fighter that they brought on, that it really brings, you know, sports and media and entertainment all together. And we just are hoping for support from the public here for the fight coming up June 30th.
Absolutely. All right. Hey, Rich, thanks for coming on, man. Good to talk to you. We'll do it again soon.
Sure. Thanks.
All right. Appreciate it. Rich Bernard with the Alex Salcedo team. Mitchell, that will be a good. That's going to be a good fight to go to. So,
should be exciting.
Good event for the city. Good event for the city. Josh, I think that's about all we can do today.
That is it.
How would you rate the show?
I'd give it a 10.
You give it a 10?
10.
I don't know. We had a couple of glitches in there. I'd say I'd give it a 9.1. So, all right. Well, I wish you luck in the Derby. I will talk to you again on Monday. Stay tuned. Keep it right here on this very radio channel, and you will hear the ultimate at 2 p.m. Stay tuned to the Sports Animal.